Macmillan Audio presents They May Not Mean To, But They Do by Kathleen Shine. Read for you by Cynthia Darlow. Chapter 1. Molly Bergman moved to California, and it broke her mother's heart. There are daughters who spend their lives trying to escape their mothers, who move to their particular California the minute they're able to, who never stop moving to California. Molly was decidedly not one of those daughters. It was a painful move even before her parents got so suddenly so old. Molly's mother was named Joy, and people said, oh, they broke the mold when they made that one. People who loved her said it, people who did not love her said it too, for the same reason. They found Joy disconcerting, and they were right. She was so intimate and so remote as a faraway nameless planet sometimes, sometimes soft and sympathetic. She was talkative, yet she heard everything you said or thought you might say. She was wise, and she was deep, intuitive, the kind of person to whom people confided their darkest secrets. She was scatterbrained and easily distractible and often forgot people's darkest secrets, which, she always said, was just as well. She seemed to Molly, growing up, to be the busiest and most important mother in New York City. Joy's work was her vocation. That's what Joy said when she was happy. When she was frustrated and tired, she said it was a velvet coffin without the velvet. She was also beautiful, radiantly beautiful, like a doe, fragile and supple and quick. She was blonde, but her eyes were as brown as a doe's. When she smiled, everyone around her smiled, and she smiled a great deal, though it was often from abstraction rather than any particular moment of happiness. She loved New York because, she liked to say, she fit in with all the misfits. Molly and her brother Daniel began their lives with Joy and their father, Aaron, in a two-bedroom apartment with dinette on the west side of Manhattan, the dinette converted into a third bedroom. Their neighbors were immigrants from Eastern Europe, emigres from Brooklyn, teachers and violinists and opera singers. You could hear the opera singers as you walked down Broadway, arias amid car horns. There were mom-and-pop dress shops and dairy restaurants and bakeries, and Molly remembered the square rooms, the high ceilings, the shutters that folded in on themselves, the deep window sills on which she used to sit and look out at the street. But when Molly was 8 and her brother 6, their father inherited his family's manufacturing business, and the Bergmans left West 89th Street. Aaron said the West Side was becoming seedy. There were fewer Eastern European immigrants and Brooklyn escapees on Park Avenue. No dairy restaurants, more Gentiles. It was a quiet, civilized neighborhood, at least until late afternoon when the private schools let out. Molly and Daniel still went to their progressive private school on the West Side, but when Molly got off the bus, she could already hear the commotion of the East Side children at the corner store. She always waited for them to leave the store before buying her own candy, and secretly envied them their noisy cabal and, even more secretly, their school uniforms. "Across the park is as far as we go," Joy declared. "No farther, Aaron." Daniel did go a bit farther when he grew up. He and his wife Coco and their two little girls lived on the Lower East Side. That was inexplicable to Joy and Aaron, moving to the tenements their grandparents had left behind. Inexplicable, yes, but accessible by subway, Joy said to Molly. The Bergmans were New Yorkers, she said, and had always been New Yorkers. This was a fact, in a way, that Molly's move to Los Angeles could never be.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?